So I don't know how many of you were here last week. Last week, Alex started us off on our new series, going through the big, amazing Bible story. The big, amazing Bible story. And I think maybe Alex decided to call it that so that he could email me with lots of references to Babs. So, you know, I see that, I think. Is there some pastoral issue with someone called Barbara in the church? Has he horrendously misremembered the name of my girlfriend? Why does he keep sending me emails with Babs in? But no, big, amazing Bible story. Last week, Alex was saying that there are four main themes. We're talking about creation, separation, restoration, and recreation. Thank you very much. And last week, Alex covered creation and separation. So his 3 points last week, in case you weren't here. Firstly, God created a kingdom, and he is the king. Secondly, God made human beings to bear his image in his kingdom. And thirdly, all of humanity, not just Adam and Eve, failed to trust and obey God. So God is the creator, the beginning of it all, and the reason behind it all. He was meant to rule and reign over his creation, and not because he's power hungry, but because he's good. He's so good that the universe is made better when there are things to reflect his goodness. And we were meant to be the best representation of his goodness in all of creation. But then each of us makes a decision at some point that we'd prefer to focus on our own importance rather than reflect the beauty of God. We don't trust God's wisdom, that he knows what's best for us, and we go our own way instead. And the Bible calls those deliberate choices to go in the opposite direction of God's loving plans for our lives. It calls that sin. And it separates us from the intimate relationship with God that we were actually intended for. And not only that, but sin also causes broken relationships with other human beings and with creation itself. And that news, that was the gloomy end to what Alex shared last week. But thankfully, today, we see hope as we look at restoration and how God defeats sin. Now, as I said, I was surprised. I've got in my notes prayer now, but I can't do any better at praying than those guys did there. So I'm just going to plow on through. So just as in the first talk, and this week we've got another three verses that focus on the parts of the story where God takes action in restoring relationship with us and defeating sin. So the first is not long after the story where we left last week in Genesis. It's Genesis 3 verse 15. Genesis 3 verse 15, this is God talking to the serpent. I'll put the context after this, but Genesis 3, 15, and I will put enmity between you and the woman and between your offspring and hers. He will crush your head and you will strike his heel. He will crush your head and you will strike his heel. So just after, this is just after Adam and Eve have been discovered for their eating of the tree that God told them not to. They're passing the blame between each other, and then they try and pass on the blame to the serpent who tempted them away. He was the one that tempted them to disobey God's instructions. He was the one that caused them to sin in the first place. That's what we're saying. So God puts a curse on the serpent, but at the end of this verse, he gives the first slight hint of a prophecy of the victory that was to eventually come. So the serpent itself is cursed for its wicked involvement in enticing humanity away from God's instructions. But God indicates that there will be a conflict between mankind and Satan's kingdom. Sometimes Satan will have victory as his forces strike the heel of mankind. But ultimate victory will come when a descendant of Adam and Eve will crush the head of the serpent. So this simple verse gives us hope not only in the big story over the course of history that we're going to continue to look into, but also in the world today and in our individual lives. So many times we see injustices around the world where evil seems to triumph. too many times this year, and some a bit too close to home for my liking. Innocent lives are lost because of the corrupt and evil opinions of a few people, and it's difficult to see how justice will be appropriately served in those circumstances. And then in our own lives, we'll often experience pain and hurt as others wrong us, and then we bear the brunt of the fallout while that other person walks away scot-free. So slightly trivial example, but 6 months ago now, my car got written off. It was parked in the road. Someone crashed into it in the middle of the night. It crashed into another car nearby. They didn't leave any contact details. So I ended up having to bear the brunt of those costs with insurance excesses and increased premiums and all that stuff. And I also, for various reasons, had inconveniences of not having my own car for about 6 months, and I had to borrow cars in order to kind of get by. So someone else, this other person who was driving this car, made a huge mistake and didn't admit to it, and it caused a great deal of frustration for me. As some of you know, I do now have a nice new car. I'm willing to show it off to anyone that's interested. But that is probably one of the things that gave me the most anxiety and frustration this year is what happened with the car. So slightly trivial example, but we know there to be evil in the world. And while we often see it and experience it from others, we also know that it comes from within us sometimes. We make selfish decisions that hurt other people. And this is the clash of the kingdoms that is alluded to in this verse. Humans are both afflicted by and also tempted by Satan's kingdom. But good news, this won't always be the case. A human will come along that will crush the head of the serpent and have the final victory over this struggle with evil that's been going on for generations. As we trace the descendants of Adam and Eve, there might have been a few early hopefuls. I was reading one thing that suggested that maybe Eve thought her own children were going to be the people, you know, direct children, that were going to be the one that crushed the head of the serpent. But that didn't work out if you know the story of Cain and Abel. None of them stood up to the temptations of the enemy. None of them stayed strong. All of them were sinful. So I'm starting to think maybe there's some indications of a hopeful lineage. Again, I'm kind of rattling through the story. We have a very short amount of time to get through a very big Bible. But Abraham comes along later, and he was promised numerous children, even though he was old and beyond the age you'd normally have children. But God said to him, you will have numerous children, generations. Paul in Romans 4 talks about Abraham being the father of many nations. And traditionally, we kind of think as Abraham being the father of the Jewish people in a kind of genealogical sense. But Paul takes that further and says he is the father of us all. Because of the faith that Abraham showed in following the instructions of God, and that same step of faith is available to us today. But equally, Abraham was sinful. He wasn't the one that crushed the head of the serpent. Further on in the book of Exodus, there's an account of the people of God being trapped in slavery in Egypt. So they'd ended up in Egypt, what originally seemed like a good idea. They were escaping famine, and there was food available to them in Egypt. Over the course of many generations, it turned into this restrictive and painful situation that they couldn't escape from. And this slavery, this kind of entrapment under the Pharaoh that it had in Egypt, this kind of mirrors humanity's battle with sin. As you all know, if you've seen the animated film The Prince of Egypt or any other films, or indeed just know the story, God rescues the people from slavery through the leadership of Moses. This story shows again that there is this clashing between two kingdoms. There's this Pharaoh who wants to maintain his power and authority by keeping the Israelites as slaves. He was probably forcing them to build great monuments for him. But God shows his authority is greater by a display of miracles that culminated in a series of plagues brought upon the Egyptians. And again, you may know the last of these plagues was a plague of death upon firstborn children. the Pharaoh's own son is killed. And you might say this could be an analogy of God crushing the head of the serpent's seed. Evil is being conquered. Meanwhile, the firstborn children of the Israelites were protected from this angel of death by sacrificing, each family sacrificed a lamb and marked their doors with its blood. And this is an early example of the ritual of sacrificing an animal in order to remove the punishment of sin. So this representation that this animal was taking the punishment itself on behalf of the people. So the image of this sacrificial lamb saving them from death and then this subsequent rescue from slavery is an obvious parallel with the sacrifice Jesus was one day to make and how he would rescue us from our slavery to sin. But spoiler alert, I'm jumping slightly too ahead in the story. The people of Israel, back to this story in Exodus, the people of Israel were then free from their physical slavery. But once they had left Egypt, they were soon enticed back into disobedience of God. They worshipped false idols. They didn't live in right community with each other. God gives the law to Moses to try and address this. So the law included instructions on how best to live. And as well, it talked more about this practice of animal sacrifices. But we have to remember these things, this sacrificing of animals, they were never intended as a permanent solution to the problem of sin. All they did were highlight humanity's need for a perfect atoning sacrifice. Much later in the history of Israel, again, I'm hurtling through the Bible, and we have King David. So King David, he brings a political and geographical victory to the people of Israel. So it sees this land of Israel have a broader and more stable period than they had ever had in the history of Israel. He had gone through all these battles, but he'd got them to the point where they had some stability. But again, if you may know about David, he too was tempted by sin. He had an affair and then arranged the death of the woman's husband. He wasn't the one that crushed the head of the serpent either. He was tempted by the serpent's kingdom. David's son, Solomon, becomes king after him. And he ushers in this lavish and celebrated period of Israel's history. And this is when the temple was built in Jerusalem. And that was there to celebrate God. And people from all different nations were drawn to see it and to hear this wisdom that God had given Solomon. So this is the pinnacle of Israel's history. But Solomon too was led astray by being drawn into relationships with women of all different faiths and beliefs. Many of the kings that followed were even worse, disobeying the commands of God and not looking after the land or its people. And one of the kings, many years after David and Solomon, rediscovered the book of the law while doing some renovations in the temple. It's like when you have a bit of a tidy out. And they found this book of the law, and it's thought that this book hadn't been read for 250 years. This was the instructions that God had given them for right living, and they hadn't even looked at it for 250 years. So it's this period of disobedient kings and disobedient nations where we get our second key verse for today. So the second one is Isaiah 53, verse 6. Isaiah 53, verse 6 says this: "We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all." We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has